The reading is from the Gospel of John, chapter 1, reading verses 6 to 8, and then 19 to 28. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. Verse 19. Now this was John's testimony when the Jews of Jerusalem sent priests and Levites to ask him who he was. He did not fail to confess, but confessed freely, "I am not the Christ." They asked him, "Then who are you? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Finally, they said, "Who are you? Give us an answer to take back to those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" John replied in the words of Isaiah the prophet, "I am the voice of one calling in the desert. Make straight the way for the Lord." Now some Pharisees who had been sent questioned him, "Why then do you baptize if you're not the Christ, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" "I baptize with water," John replied, "but among you stands one you do not know. He is the one who comes after me, the thongs of whose sandals I am not worthy to untie." This all happened at Bethany, on the other side of the Jordan, where John was baptizing. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. Thanks for reading that. And it's great to be with you. As I said at the beginning, I am so missing being with you all. And I wish I could be in person. I wish we could be in the church live streaming. We've had some technical problems with the internet that stopped us from being able to feel confident about live streaming in that way. And that's really frustrating. And I am feeling out of sync in terms of Christmas, in terms of how we move forward on this. So if you're feeling the same, well, I echo that as well. I heard a statistic just yesterday, which I found challenging, actually, because I heard that there are people who call themselves or would be known as and we'd recognize as committed Christians. Obviously, you'd expect people to go to church almost every week. And before the pandemic, 80% of those people were going to church almost every week. But that figure has dropped to 50%. And in this time, 50% of people who have committed Christians are no longer, have not seen anything, are not gone to anything, and have disconnected altogether from the friendship and fellowship of the church. And this is it's a really sad thing. And I guess my concern is that I just hope that we will be able to gather back again and to do that as soon as possible, because I feel like we're getting into bad habits of not gathering together. And I guess it's a refining process. I mean, maybe that's one of the few good things about this, is that it's a refining process. And a refining process is something that God's people have gone through many times before. And one of the ways that God has worked through his people as they've been refined is to speak through prophets. So we're going to do, I'm really glad to be able to talk about the prophets this morning. The prophets of whom John was the last and perhaps the most important, because he was the one who gets to announce and herald Jesus. Now, we don't tend to talk about the prophets much at all, really. We get them out a little bit around Christmas. We kind of pick out a few of the prophecies of old, but we don't really tend to get much of them out much. And we don't tend to read them very much. At least we don't tend to read them in our liturgies and in our personal times of prayer, unless you follow a lectionary, which draws you into them. I really just want to spend some time this morning going into the prophets, because I've been in them quite a bit this last year. I've been reading a bit of Jeremiah. That's quite challenging reading. And then, of course, because Advent comes along, I've been digging into Isaiah. And I have to say, I really enjoy Isaiah. But I don't know if you know the prophets well or you feel comfortable with them, but there's a great book called The Hebrew Prophets, Visionaries of the Ancient World. And Desmond Tutu wrote the foreword for this. And I just want to read a few things that he said in his foreword. It's a great little book. You can actually download it for free. If you bung the heading into Google and see if you can find it, you can download this as a PDF for free. And I really recommend it. Anyway, he says this: some people have thought that the prophets of Israel were a band of soothsayers, something like the Delphic oracles of ancient Greece, the sort of person one would consult if one hoped to win the lottery. But the prophets were nothing of the sort. They were not glorified crystal ball gazers whose chief activity was to predict the future. They were much more forth-tellers rather than foretellers, because they were fundamentally God's spokespersons. They characteristically proclaimed, "Thus saith the Lord." They brought a message from the Lord, whose mouthpiece they claimed to be. And through their words, they were trying to move their fellow Israelites to obey God, to urge them to trust him who had proved so trustworthy in the past, and not to place their trust in the false gods that were so frequent, they were so frequently tempted to worship. Failure to have such undivided loyalty to God or obedience to his decrees was bound to have the most dire consequences, which is what they warned against again and again. And then Tutu goes on, he says, it is these consequences that the prophets predicted as inevitable, given the moral character of God whose spokespersons they claim to be. But this God was not ultimately wrathful, he says. His intention for Israel, and so for the whole of creation, was beneficent. God desired the best for all his creatures. And so the prophets saw in their poetic imagination, as artists see, the new world God wanted to bring into being. Like poets, they used highly emotive and richly imaginative language to describe the new world and the good time coming, like a lion lying down with the lamb. The will of their God was that Israel should live in an exemplary manner, where the widow or the orphan and the alien were cared for as of infinite worth, where justice would flow like a river, where goodness would root out evil, where the strong cared for the weak, where the hungry were fed, where prisoners were set free, where the blind were made to see, the deaf to hear, the lame whole again, the dumb to speak. All these not as optional extras, but as of the essence of religion. They had to love God and their neighbor as themselves. Otherwise, it was all worthless. And he finishes off with this. And he says, how anyone, having read the prophets, could say something like, don't mix religion with politics, is quite baffling. Which Bible have they read? Religion is about the whole of life. That's what the prophets are proclaiming. In situations of injustice, nothing could be so revolutionary and so subversive of the status quo that the Bible than the Bible and its prophets. Thanks be to God. They inspired us in our struggle against apartheid. We have won a great victory for peace and reconciliation, goodness and mercy. May they always remain such a potent source of inspiration. Desmond Tutu. Well, this week in one of my small groups that I'm part of, I kicked off the group by asking everyone, what's God been saying to you recently? And there was an awkward kind of laugh and shuffling of seats, even I could tell that on the Zoom call that we were on. But as we gave time and let the pause kind of take its work, people began to think, what has God been saying to us recently? And people had heard God speak in numerous different ways. We went around the room and these are the kinds of things people said. A couple of us were hearing God's call through the lives of people in need around them, wondering how best to reach out and to connect. One of us was hearing God's voice through their own brokenness and personal experience and pain, and knew that God was calling them to use this for the sake of others. A couple of us were hearing God speak through the experience of being out of work, the need to stop, and the learning of patience. One of us was hearing God speak to them in their role as a father, even with older children, and how important that was for them. One of us felt God was speaking about listening to others taking real time to simply be with people and to give them their full attention. One of us sensed God was leading them into greater honesty in their relationships. And one of us felt sure that God was telling them to get their priorities right, not to drift in their relationship with him, as they had noticed themselves drift away in recent weeks, finding it hard to connect with the service online on Sundays. Now, that's just a straw poll of a group of people who gathered earlier this week, having heard God speak. And I wonder what God is saying to you. What's he been saying to you? What's God been saying to you recently? Maybe just have a think about that. Well, that's great. I mean, you need a bit, maybe sometimes need a bit longer to mull on that question, but I think that's so important for us to work out what God is saying. And undoubtedly, God will be saying something to us if we pay attention to him. Following our initial chat, so going around the room and asking each other what God was saying, I introduced a passage that we were going to read together, and it was from Isaiah 40. Isaiah 40, I don't know if you know much about Isaiah, but Isaiah is, I actually needed reminding of this. Isaiah is a book of two books. Some people even say that it's three books. But there's Isaiah chapter 1 to 39 that was written by the guy called Isaiah, and he's named, and you see him coming up a lot in the story. And it's before the people go into Israel, into exile. And it's all filled with warnings and a call to return and a call to change heart. But it's got these beautiful verses of Isaiah 9 and Isaiah 11 that we read, for to us a child is born, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. You know, those passages. And it's got other fantastic passages, Isaiah 25 or Isaiah 35, the ones about the lame walking and dancing like gazelle, and joy filling everyone's hearts. I mean, it's fantastic poetry there, bringing hope. But Isaiah 40 onwards, that's written beyond exile, looking back. And that's why people think that it's written by two different authors. There's quite a big time gap between them. But it catches up the same theme. It fits together. So I can see why the early, I don't know what to call them, scholars, maybe the people who wrote the scrolls, put the scrolls together. All those guys put the two bits of these stories together, because God speaks in Isaiah 40 to his people. And it's a story of return. And so we started this conversation about Isaiah 40, and I just tried to set some of the kind of context for this passage, because the people had been in exile, which is the worst of places to be in, and of course it was hard enough to live anyway in those days. I mean, there was no central heating and all those kinds of things, so life was brutal and hard anyway. But they were in exile under a brutal power called Babylon at the time. But they God was speaking to them in this situation, and he was saying, I'm going to come and I'm going to bring you home again. God is faithful to his plan. He's saying he's going to redeem his people. He's going to buy them back. He's going to bring them home. He's going to forgive their sins. He may be refining them, but they will come home. They had all lost joy. They had all lost hope. Peace was a distant dream, crushed in a thousand ways. But then God speaks, and he says these words. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. comfort, tenderness, forgiveness. And then verse 3. A voice of one calling in the desert. In the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be raised up. Every mountain shall be made low. And the rough ground shall become level. The rugged places a plain. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And all people will see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Now, these are familiar words. And I don't know if any of you have are familiar with Handel's Messiah. And maybe you can hear it. Every valley shall be exalted. That's all I'm going to sing now. That's enough for me. But you don't want to miss the power of these words. Yahweh is speaking of a time that will come when the barriers that prevent, the mountains that prevent him from being seen, that prevent his glory from being revealed, all the obstacles that have hidden his presence and the and his honor from being displayed will be reduced to nothing so that it can be put on show once again. You who bring good news to Zion, go up on a high mountain. You who bring good news to Jerusalem, lift up your voice with a shout. Lift it up. Don't be afraid. Say to the towns of Judah, here is your God. See, the sovereign Lord comes with power and he rules with a mighty arm. See, his reward is with him and his recompense accompanies him. He tends the flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms. Beautiful words. He carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those that have young. The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. Those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. There's going to be a day when God's glory is revealed and the way of the Lord will be made ready, and someone is going to come along and walk along that way and return to Jerusalem with healing in his wings, and the blind will see and the lame will walk and the dumb will start speaking. Now, I don't know if you could see the echoes, but that's exactly what John is trying to remind us of. He's trying to get us to see this. And I say John, what I mean is John, the guy who wrote the gospel, John, not John the Baptist. John, the gospel writer, is trying to draw attention to this great story. And so he sets it up. Do you remember in John chapter 1? You remember John chapter 1? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. He's reminding us that there's a light coming in the darkness. And then he says, and there's this guy called John. He came to witness to the light so that everyone might believe. He himself was not the light. He only came as a witness to the light. And do you remember verse 14 of this opening stanza, John chapter 1, verse 14? The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory. Really important word in John's gospel. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came with the Father, from the Father, full of grace and truth. No one has ever seen God but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. Can you see how that ties in with Isaiah 40, when the mountains are going to be brought low and the valleys are going to be lifted up so that the way of the Lord and the glory of the Lord can be revealed? And then you get this passage, the second half of the reading. Now, this was John's testimony. This was his story when the Jewish leaders in Jerusalem sent priests and Levites to ask him who he was, because they all were trying to fathom, who is this Baptist guy, this prophet-like figure? He did not fail to confess, but confessed freely, I am not the Messiah, I'm not the Christ, I'm not the King. So they asked him, who are you? Are you Elijah, one of the prophets, the first one of the first prophets? He said, no, I am not. And then he said, are you the prophet? He said, no. And finally, he said, well, who are you? They asked, who are you? Give us an answer to take back to those who sent us. What do you say about yourself? And John replied in the words of Isaiah the prophet from Isaiah 40. I am the voice of one calling in the wilderness. Make straight the way for the Lord. So what is John the Baptist saying here? He's telling them to look beyond him, to see who's coming. He's telling them that he's just a signpost pointing the way. He's telling them that he's a herald announcing the arrival of God's glory that they had longed for all those years before. How wonderful are the feet of those who bring good news. He's pointing to Jesus, the King, the Messiah, the Christ, the man of sorrows, the suffering servant, the one who grew up like a tender shoot, like a root out of dry ground, with no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him, the one despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain, like one from whom people hide their faces, who is despised and held in low esteem. He's pointing to him. This John is pointing to Jesus, the one who would take up our pain and bear our suffering, the Lamb who takes away the sin of the world. Of course, we would consider him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted, but he would be pierced for our transgressions, says John. He will be crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that will bring us peace will be on him. And by his wounds, we will be healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us have turned to our own way. But the Lord will lay on him the iniquity of us all. He'll be oppressed and afflicted, yet he will not open his mouth. He'll be led like a lamb to the slaughter. And as a sheep before its slaughter is shearers is silent, so he will not open his mouth. So he'll be cut off from the land of the living and assigned a grave with the wicked, though he has done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it will be the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer, because the Lord will make his life an offering for sin. And he will see his offspring, and prolong his days. Because after he has suffered, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. This righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. And God will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death, and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. And John the Baptist doesn't quote the whole of Isaiah 53 like I have just done. But that's what was in his mind. And that's what's in our minds when we go back and look at the prophets, when we read Isaiah 40 or we read Isaiah 53 of the servant songs. We see Jesus in this story. This is the one who is coming, the one who comes to take away the sin of the world. This week, I've chatted and prayed with people who are going through their own exile, a challenging and hard place they are finding themselves in, people with families visited by cancer, by severe mental illness, visited by a deep grief, by crisis in their marriage. These are real, painful, terrible things people are going through. And this might be you this morning, or it may be someone else you know of. Advent isn't about anticipating the coming of Christmas. Advent for us is about anticipating the coming of the Christ, of the Savior, of Jesus. So my prayer today is that the story will give you hope as we break bread again, that you'll receive the grace and the love and the hope of God. May you know that Jesus is the one you've been waiting for. May you receive him with joy. May you know that he has traveled the heavens and the earth to be with you and to bring you light and healing and life. And may you know that he died for you, that he forgives you and welcomes you home. And may his glory shine on you. Every valley will be exalted. He's coming, and he's coming for you, and he's coming for me. He's coming for the world. Amen. God so loved that he gave us his one and only Son.